Right, okay. So I'm going to talk about commutativity of adiabatic elimination and instantaneous feedback. So instantaneous feedback was what John just explained. For general class of quantum feedback networks with Markovian nodes. So this is again joint work with John. So this is based on this paper, which was published in the Royal Society Physical Field of Supercool Transactions A, which was quite recent. It was in November 2012. Okay, so this is outline my talk. So I'm going to start. Well, I probably don't need to talk about instantaneous feedback too much because John already explained that. And I'll talk about adiabatic elimination, which is probably familiar for most people here. And then the main point is going to show how this instantaneous feedback and adiabatic elimination, you know, are really instances of what's called a sure complementation. And I'm going to state the main results and give some concluding remarks. Right, so this is kind of a network that we're going to be talking about. So it's the same as what John was talking about. So we have nodes ABC, which are connected by quantum fields, optical fields. So you know you have fields that are coming in and going out, and also fields that interconnect nodes. So you know there's an equal number of fields going in and going out because whatever comes in must come out. All right, so we're going to, all the components, each node of the network is going to be Markovian. So if you disconnect the node from one another, then it's going to evolve as a Markov system. So if you trace out the field, then the reduced density operator will satisfy the usual mass equation for a Markovian system. Right, so then, of course, there's a finite time delay that was discussed in John's talk. So between, of course, when the field propagates from B to C and from the different nodes, there will be a finite time delay. So in that case, when you do have that finite time delay, of course, the whole network itself is no longer Markov. So this is what you can do. So you know, so you can take the limit where you take these internal fields that connect the nodes to go to zero, and then you can recover a Markovian approximation to that. Right, so it's a model reduction procedure in essence, because you're starting with a non-Markov quantum network, and then after you take the limit of time delay going to zero between interconnecting fields, you get a single node Markov system, which, of course, how well this Markov system approximates that, it depends on how big the time delay is. I mean, you wouldn't expect the Markov system to be a good approximation. For example, your time delay is much larger than the time scale of the dynamics of your system, right? So, you know, if your time delay is, you know, are small and smaller than, let's say, the time scale of the dynamics of your nodes, and you know, the Markov approximation would be reasonably good. Right. So there's another kind of, the focus is really about model reduction. So instantaneous feedback was a reduction from a non-Markov system to a Markov one. So another kind of elimination, another kind of model reduction procedure that people often consider is adiabatic elimination. We have two, you know, systems that can have two well-separated timescales, with slow and fast dynamics. So you know, if these timescales become infinitely separated, then you can, you know, eliminate the fast one and retain the slow one, and this is called adiabatic elimination in the physics literature, and the math literature is called singular perturbation. So you know, this has been, I mean, of course, this is not new. You know, it's been on for a while, but a rigorous version of this was recently given by Galton, Van Handel, and Silberfarb, which sort of given a rigorous treatment of this adiabatic elimination procedure for open Markov quantum systems in a quite, you know, setting. So I'll go through that a little bit. So this adiabatic elimination has turned out to be quite useful in the radio, besides the obvious point that, you know, it's a model reduction procedure because you're removing your fast subspace and you're retaining the slow, and so you reduce the size of your Hilbert space. There's also, you know, another thing that is that it turned out to be useful for approximate engineering of exotic types of one or more or two or more body couplings. So the type of coupling that you don't, you know, that are not really natural and you have to engineer. So some example includes this field quadrature measurements that was proposed by Wiseman and Milburn, and a continuous parity measurement a realization of a continuous parity measurement operated by Kirchhoff, Belton, Silberfarb, and Mabuchi. And also, like, for example, like how you make arbitrary linear couplings between oscillator modes and traveling oscillator fields, for example. Right, so you have these two model reduction procedures. So you have the instantaneous feedback and adiabatic elimination. So, you know, so there is a question, you know, so you have these two different operations on the same kind of system. So, you know, whether, you know, you can unify or whether something that unifies them. So that's what we're going to see in this talk. So this is building on a previous work. So we consider not a general class of network, but a special class where you have some fast oscillators that you will eliminate. So this appeared in this paper in Journal of Mathematical Physics in 2010. So yeah, one of the questions is, you know, you have these two operations, adiabatic elimination and instantaneous feedback. So you could, you know, apply them both in the same network, but apply them in two different orders, right? So, you know, there is this question whether, you know, you take one order, you know, you apply adiabatic elimination first and then instantaneous feedback, or you apply instantaneous feedback first and then adiabatic elimination, where you're going to get the same reduced model. I mean, you could potentially end up with two different models, right? So, but in fact, what we showed under certain technical conditions, you know, these operations do commute for this special class of network, right? But then this was a restricted kind of network. So we wanted to, you know, extend it to a more general class of network. So this is what this work is about. But the good thing about studying this kind of system was it essentially brought out what was really going on. You know, what's making these things commute, right? So the next step is to generalize the idea that get to this special network for more general networks. All right, so motivation is really this kind of complex coherent feedback network, so analyzing this kind of network. So for example, this was a work that I did with collaborators Kirchhoff, Pavlichin, Mambucci at Stanford. So we proposed this kind of, you know, it's an autonomous quantum character, three-qubit bitflip quantum error correction network. So it's a coherent feedback. So you have two controllers here, the Alice coherent controller that implement the quantum error correction. So this was a really massive network. It was, you know, it's big, but you have oscillators coupled to like some finite level system. So, you know, if you're going to sim, so you have several of them, and these guys also have oscillators in them. So, you know, this is quite hard to simulate. So, I mean, if you want to keep a few, you know, pop state for the oscillator, then, you know, you have a very huge system that you couldn't simulate. So, you know, so we have to take this a limit where you can eliminate the oscillator modes. So in a parameter regime, we can do that. So then you also, you know, it's a network, so you need to get, so we wanted to get a Markovian description for the network. So, you know, so this was later extended by my collaborators to this kind of coherent 9-qubit vector show. So that was even more complicated. You actually have four controllers now, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you have 9 qubits. So, you know, so analyzing the kind of system is, you know, it's not possible, it's just too big. So you want to get a reduced model you can simulate, right? But then you apply these two techniques, and again, there's a little bit of a question whether, you know, whether it's consistent or not. We apply different orders. In fact, for these two examples, they do, I mean, by brute force checking, you can check that they do commute, right? But we want to establish whether that's a general property of these networks, or maybe there's something special about these particular networks that make that possible. All right, so I'm going to start with just a little bit more detail. So you just saw this equation before. So we have our system here, which is an open Markov quantum system, which may be interconnected with several fields. So they evolve according to this unitary. But there's something different about my unitary compared to what the unitary that John had. I'm putting my U on the right side, okay? So there's a reason for that. I'll come to that. But basically, it's equivalent. I'm just putting my U on the right, and so I have the same operator that John had. And for this to be unitary, you need to have these necessary conditions be satisfied. So K plus K, so star is a joint order Hermitian conjugate, has to be equal to minus L times L star. N has to be unitary, and M has to satisfy this relation. Okay, so that's these conditions are necessary for the solution of this quantum stochastic differential U to be unitary. Okay, it's necessary, but it's not sufficient. All right, so let's take our PCE. So I'm going to call this, the right PCE because the generator appears on the right. So we're going to make some assumptions because, so we're following the setup that was of Belkin, Van Handel, and Silberbaum. They make everything very general. So we're going to allow K, L, and M to be possibly unbounded operators. So, you know, we're going to assume that all these coefficients are going to have a common invariant domain script B. And from this quantum stochastic differential, then you can assemble the coefficients N, L, M into this kind of matrix here. So you saw this already in Stone's talk. So this is called an Itô generator matrix for your PCE. So all you do is just collect all those operator coefficients and put them in this way. But of course, this is for the right PCE, while what you saw was John's talk was the left PCE. Right, so this is show complement of a matrix. So you've all seen this before, but just I'll just remind what it is. So you know, if you have a matrix which is in block form like that, A, B, C, D, then the Schur complement of this matrix M with respect to the subblock A is given by this formula here. Right? So you can also, of course, take the Schur complement with respect to the subblock as well, right? But you know, that's how it's defined. And we have to assume that A is invertible for this to be defined, right? Okay, so then we're going to, okay, let's talk about the incident domain feedback first. So some of these fields will be, you know, there will be fields that will go in and go out, and there will be fields that will be used to connect nodes, right? So the fields that are used to connect nodes, we're going to label them as internal fields. And the fields that actually, you know, they don't interconnect nodes, but will actually leave the system, right? We're going to call them external fields. And this internal field will get connected with one another, right? So according to this division of the fields into internal and external fields, right, we're going to split also our coupling operators into, so we're going to label internal and external, right? So that means, so Li means the coupling to internal fields, and Le is external, and the same with M. And N, we're going to split into four, because it's a scattering matrix, so there's a scattering between internal to internal, and from external to internal, and from external to external, and from internal to external, right? And then we're going to call this row matrix that consists of these two guys as Ni, and this row here as Ne. So it's just a splitting of your operators into what belongs to the internal fields, what's associated with the internal field and what's associated with the external. Right, and then we can partition our integer-generated matrix according to our partitioning of the operators according to the internal and external fields, so you get something like this, right? And then you can take this, so when you take the time delay of your network, the internal time delay for your network to go to zero, then you can show that the resulting Markovian reduced model is a Schur complement of, so it's going to be given by this formula that you have here, right? So you take the original iterator matrix before you take the instantaneous feedback limit, right? So you have that. And then when you take so we're going to connect the interconnecting fields. So we're going to connect all the internal fields. So so the Itô generator matrix for the reduced model after you make that interconnection, that's going to be given by the Schur complement of this matrix here with respect to this block here. Okay. So for that to happen, you need this guy here to be invertible. Okay. So that was already mentioned by John in his talk. So this is what the Schur complement of this Itô generator matrix with respect to this block is given by this expression down here. Alright? So what's happening in the instantaneous feedback is that you start with a Itô generator matrix for your original system, right? And then you take a Schur complement of that Itô generator matrix with respect to this sub-block, okay, and that gives you the Itô generator matrix of another system, which is your reduced model. Alright, so this expression G. With the expression of the Schur complement of G with respect to the subblock NII minus identity, right? It's again an Itô generator matrix. And that describes the reduced model after you take the time delay to be zero. So really this instantaneous feedback is kind of structure preserving transformation. So it takes a Itô generator matrix and gives you back an Itô generator matrix. Okay, now to move on to adiabatic elimination. Right, so our setup is like this. So we have our system, which is given by this QSEE at the top, but the parameters, but your operators M, K, and N may depend on K, right? N doesn't actually depend on K, so N is actually K independent. So K is a real number, some real parameter which is going to go to infinity. So this real parameter, so it's one single parameter for all the nodes in the network. So we're going to assume that so this setup follows the setup of Belkin-Pathandel superfile. So you have the operators are of this form, and you can see the k how this Lk depends on k. Where this n, f, g, a, b, and y, they're all just fixed operators that satisfy this property that we want. And we have to have these constraints here. So these are the necessary conditions for this QSEE to have a unitary solution. So we're going to have our slow subspace. It's going to be the kernel of your operator y, which appears as in this k squared term, and the fast subspace is going to be the orthogonal complement to your slow subspace, and we're going to use this notation PS denotes the projection onto your slow subspace, and PF is the projection to the fast one. All right, so these are something that you need for, I'm going to show you a theorem in a few slides, but let's just set up the assumptions first. So you need some structural assumptions to ensure that your limit will actually, you know, will actually satisfy the necessary conditions for the solution of your quiz, of your limit quiz to be unitary. So we're going to assume, okay, so we have a splitting of your subspace into slow.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
I've really lost track of what Y is. And since it's so crucial for understanding adiabatic elimination, maybe you can say it again.
Oh, right. So let's go back. So our K, our operator K, which is this guy here, right? So we have three terms. So the term that will depend on K squared, that's a Y here, right? And there's a term that depends on K, and then the co-operator coefficient is A, and there's one that doesn't depend on K.
Imagine for the moment I'm a physicist.
Mm-hmm.
And say that in physics terms.
Right, okay. So maybe I can give an example.
That was flexible.
Yeah, okay.
What I'm particularly confused by is the connection between Y plus Y star and your K operator. So anyway, but please give me an example.
All right, yeah, so I can give you an example. Yeah. Yeah, so for example, you might have, so let's say you have a cavity maybe, and you have a two-level system inside coupled to the cavity with some coupling constant G, right? And let's say your cavity has a coupling coefficient K, right? So let's say that we have this G and K, right? So we can write that as K times G and K times So the coupling coefficient should be like that. Okay, so this is how the K dependence is going to be, right? So your G is going to, the ratio of G to lambda 0 might be K. So there's a ratio, so let's say your G and K, so your K and G are both very large.
Yeah, I'm having trouble seeing the difference between lowercase and uppercase.
Sorry?
I'm having trouble understanding the difference between lowercase and uppercase because I think
which
capital K, right?
Yeah, it's kappa. Yeah, something like that, right? So then we have that your, so if you write down, so this term here, IH minus L, right? So this is going to be OK, right? So let's say we have this Hamiltonian, the coupling between your cavity and your it's a Jane Cummings type, right? So let's say it's going to be so what is it? So A and sigma plus here, sorry. So it's something like that, right? So there's a coupling constant G there, right? So then you write down this G, it's going to look like K G zero. So I think it should be an I here, sorry. So it should be minus there. Minus right, then you have here half of K times your L. So your L is gonna be kappa times A. Right, so that's going to be equal to kappa times, what is it, kappa lambda 0 times A, right? So, okay, so what do we get? We get here kappa times, all right, so let me see, kappa times, so A dagger A, okay. So let me see. So this isn't a good. So maybe what I should have done was I should have put K squared here, right? Because I want a K squared to appear here. That's not going to appear right now. Right? So if I do that, I get this is going to be K times lambda zero.
You want K to be multiplying every sort of bosonic field as previously described, right? That's what.
No, no, it's on the coupling operator only.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So here you see. So this is this would be your K. This should be, what is this? G0? Well, okay, I can see your confusion. Okay, so it's a small, this small K, that's a large K, right?
And there's a kappa too, so it's really hard to see from here.
Oh, okay.
If I'm close, maybe it's hard to see.
Right.
But I understand now that A corresponds to what I would call the Gaines-Cummings term.
Yes.
Y corresponds to what I call the service loss term.
No, so the Y is really coming from this term, the Ito correction, right? So the Ito correction will have term which will have depend on k squared, right? And there will be this one will depend on k. This will be your a.
Yes.
Right. And this will be your y.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm
saying. Yeah. So does that help?
Yes, that helps.
Okay. Right. Okay. That's good.
Okay. Now. Are we guaranteed that y plus y star is f star?
No, you have to have. I mean, if this is coming, if this is coming from a physical model, yes, you would have that, right? I mean, if the solution is going to be unitary, you have to have that.
Okay.
So all this condition will be satisfied.
So this is a very peculiar definition of slow and fast, then. So consider as a Gedanken experiment, the scenario in which G naught is much, much larger than or rather K G naught is much, much larger than K squared gamma naught. Right, so that scenario, I could also do AD-back elimination.
Right. Yeah, but then it wouldn't fit.
But then it wouldn't be kernel Y. That would be interesting to me.
Yeah, okay. So we have to check whether...
Loss-oriented AD-back elimination. This is sort of quantum Zeno-oriented AD-back elimination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Right, we should discuss that whether that actually fits in that or not, right?
What's
that? No, we can discuss that, see if that fits in this framework, and what this example here.
No, I mean, this is the example you give, mm-hmm. and the more general framework, which is that y is the kernel of y determines what's slow,
right.
is always the framework of Zeno-like physics.
Right.
Rather than, for example, gap physics.
Right.
Where there's an energetic gap that causes fast and slow.
Yeah, okay, so but maybe we can discuss that. Maybe it does actually fit in here. Right, or
I mean, it's entirely conceivable that one can do the AD back elimination with the other scenario, but it just this one is now I can understand.
Okay, right. Okay, thank you. So that K comes out of your physical system, and then you just separate the ones that depend on K squared, K and K, and B. Okay, so you have so you need these structural conditions. So we have a splitting into fast and slow subspaces. And then you assume that that when you split when you write the rate matrix differentiation in terms of this slow and subspace that you have this structure for your Y, A, and F matrix, right? And you only assume that Y, F is invertible on PFD. Okay. All right. And then you need this last structure condition. So this last structure is really saying that so that your fast subspace does not spoil your slow one, right? So it's this last condition is a decoupling condition. So your fast subspace does not depend on your slow one, but your slow subspace does not depend on your fast subspaces at all. So it's a decoupling condition. Right. So we can introduce this extended Ito generator matrix EE, right? So again, before we had this Ito generator matrix, but we need something that's a bit more general, so we're going to introduce this extended Ito generator matrix. That's how it's defined. So let's go back to this previous slide. So I just mentioned I'm using this notation XAB. So if X is an operator, AB, then you have the X, you're going to define XAB as X sandwich between the projection onto A and the projection onto B. So this A can only take values on the slow or fast subspace. Right? So this is the Ito extended generator matrix. You can define it in this way. Okay? And then once you define the Ito generator matrix DE, then we can introduce the adiabatic elimination operator A. Right? So this elimination operator A takes your system, the Ito generator matrix for your original system, which depends on this K, as we discussed, right? So the K dependence there. So it takes this heterogeneous geometric matrix, right, and it produces another heterogeneous geometric, which I denote by G hat, which doesn't depend on K anymore, so the K has disappeared. And that's defined as a sure complement of this extended heterogeneous geometric, taken with respect to the subplot as defined by YFF, so this subplot here, okay? And then sandwich between the projection operators onto the slow subspace, right? So that's what you, so you get this, so you get that this maps this guy into this guy G hat, which is defined as this, right? So again, this assumption one and condition two, right, guarantees that this after you apply this operation split A onto your GK, then you're gonna get also another heterogeneous matrix, right? So this is another, this is a second heterogeneous matrix, which is so this again, like the instantaneous feedback, this operator script A is a transformation that takes an heterogeneous matrix and you know gives up another heterogeneous matrix. So it's also a structure preserving transformation. So let's go back to what we have just defined. We find this heterogeneous matrix G hat, and its components will be given by these expressions here. Okay. So right, and you have this heterogeneous matrix with components K hat, L hat, M hat, and M hat identity, right? Then you have the corresponding QSDE you can associate with that, which is this one. So all the coefficients of this QSDE are now the K hat, M hat, L hat, and M hat, right? Okay, so there's this other condition. We're not going to worry too much about it because you know the original setting wanted to include unbounded operators, and this only becomes a concern when you have the unbounded operators. But if you think of just bounded operators, then that's not really necessary. All right, so what I've been doing the three slides is to bring me to this slide. So this is the main result of the convergence of Dalton, Van Hallen, and Silberfeld. So basically, under all those assumptions that I've listed, right? So in this QSDE UKT, which from a physical, it's a physical system, right? It would be unitary, right? But actually for this result to hold, it doesn't have to be unitary, but it has to be what's called a compaction co-cycle, right? So this, let's say our UKT is unitary for all K, right? All those assumptions are satisfied. And then you have this unitary U hat T, which is defined as in the previous slide, right? So you have this unitary U hat T, which is defined by K hat, that I was K hat, L hat, M hat, and N hat, which are defined on like that, right? Then what this result shows is that, you know, this unitary which depends on K will converge to this unitary limit unitary U hat, right? In this sense. Okay, so it's a uniform convergence of a fixed time intervals. And this is true for all components phi on the slow subspace and the Fock space of your field. Okay, so the convergence is in this sense, right? Now we can, yes?
So I start wondering how much time you think you would need?
I'll try to get it in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, is that still in time, on time?
More or less,
yeah. Right. So we can partition the adiabatic nation, so we can do adiabatic nation followed by instantaneous feedback, right? So that means that, you know, you apply, so when you do adiabatic nation first, you take a sure component with respect to this matrix, and then from that previous matrix, you take a closed sure complement with respect to this. So that's what this is essentially saying, right? So you can show that the adiabatic relation followed by instantaneous feedback is going to be given by the sure complement here, which is sandwiched by your projection operators on your slow subspace, right? And then the other way, you can also do instantaneous feedback followed by adiabatic elimination, okay? So under all those assumptions that we already saw, and there's this other assumption here, the kernel of Y of this is equal to the slope of the. So what's happening is that, you know, so when you interconnect your system, right, what happens is that the kernel of Y when you interconnect the system might not be the kernel of your systems before they were interconnected. So you need to have this assumption to make sure that in the slope subspace before interconnection, the slope subspace after interconnection is the same subspace, right? So if that is true, right, then you can show that you can write instantaneous feedback followed by that information as this guy, which is the sure complement here. So you first take instantaneous feedback, and then you take the sure complement with respect to this matrix, right, and you sandwich it between the projection operator and the slow subspace. Okay. So basically, right, the thing that makes everything work is this what's called a successive sure complementation. So if you take, let's say, this big matrix here, and you take a Schur complement with respect to this guy, right? And then after you take a Schur complement with respect to that, this guy, you take a Schur complement with respect to this guy, right? It's the same as you take a Schur complement first with respect to this guy, and with respect to that guy, and that's all the two of them are the same as you taking a Schur complement with respect to this big 2x2 block. Okay, so that's called the successive Schur complementation rule from linear algebra, and that's what makes this work. So in fact, right, say all those assumptions that we set up are true, then you have that the two orders of operation are the same. Okay? Well, the rest of this, they're just conditions to make sure that your solutions are well defined, et cetera, that you don't really need to worry with it, say you're working with just random operators of your operator coefficients, right? So basically what this result is saying is that, you know, as soon as both operations are, you know, as soon as the two orders result in a well defined system, then they're gonna be equal. So that explains why, you know, in those two special kindness, you do have, you know, you take a different order, you do get the same reduced model. And so, all right, so that brings me to the end. So the main take-home message is really like, you know, eidetic invention and instantaneous feedback, you know, they can both be viewed as transformation of Itô generator matrices to Itô generator matrices. And in fact, you can cast them both as Schur complements, okay, but with respect to different subblocks of a common matrix of operators, which in this, so I mean, which we refer to as an extended Itô generator matrix, right? And under certain conditions, it means it's not really so good, but you know, as soon as both operations are, you know, as both sequence of operations are well defined, you're going to get that adaptive information, and they can be interchanged. So, you know, so they will yield a unique reduced QHD model, in, you know, even if you take them in different orders. So that's okay. I hope I made it on time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seems that Jake has a question.
I have plenty of questions, but I'll catch most of them later. But a short question. So this is in the limit where your k parameter is going to infinity.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious if there's a sort of 1 over k perturbation theory which allows you to consider corrections to that limit.
It's possible. I don't know.
The example for energetic gaps, which is the Shriver-Wolf transform, sort of canonical example case. So I've got a gap, a low energy space, a high energy space. The Schur decomposition tells me about the first correction. But then there's higher corrections, which I can get by a successive series of similar outcomes. And I'm kind of curious, and the structure you provided here seems to suggest that the same thing's possible. But
right. I think we could discuss that, I guess. Yeah.
Do we have other questions?
Yes. I have some questions. So basically, I'm trying to understand. So the first thing I want to understand is in what kind of physical scenario you have both slow and fast dynamics.
Well, this would be one example, right? So you can have the oscillator would have faster dynamics than your two-level system, uh-huh. Right? And you can eliminate the oscillator from your. I mean, it's dynamics much faster, uh-huh. Right? And you eliminate that. You just keep retain the slow one. So at the end of the day, in this situation, you just have. So okay. So let me draw this again. So you have like your. It's coupled to a field, say, uh-huh. Right? Or maybe I have a k in that side. Let's fix this mirror to be fully reflecting, right? And then you know, if you take k to infinity, what's basically going to happen in the limit is that you have this guy, you've limited your oscillator, and you just have the atom or the finite level system that's inside going to be directly coupled to your field with no more oscillators.
Is this somehow related to the rotation wave approximation?
The rotation wave approximation is. I mean, it's also a kind of singular perturbation, but probably not of this type.
I understand in control theory, if you have both slow and fast dynamics, essentially you average out the fast dynamics. Is that the idea? Intuitively, is that the same idea?
No, here it's not. It's not averaging out, but it's decoupling the slow and fast dynamics. So in the limit, there's no more interaction between the two.
And then you use the slow dynamics to approximate the original dynamics.
Yes, that's right. But you have to start in the slow subspace, right? Because if you start in the fast subspace, then you're going to stay in the fast subspace. So this limit result, right? So let's go back to the limit result. Right, so this limit result is for when you start in the slow subspace and you remain there. Right, so it's invariant, it's not going to go to your fast subspace. So you get So you reduce your Hilbert space from the big one, which is the HS plus your fast, right? To just a slow subspace. And you start in the slow subspace. In the limit, the slow subspace will remain there. It won't go out of that.
I actually don't quite understand this theorem, but I guess I should probably ask you offline.
Right.
So the other thing is this somehow related to the noise picture?
What is the noise picture?
You have some quantum noise affecting your system. Is this can you treat those noise as your fast dynamics?
Well, I think that's probably a different kind of limit. You're probably talking about where you start with a smeared field and you go to a singular field. So that's probably what you're thinking about. That's different.
From actually, I don't know what that is. But
right. Okay. So right. So. So this commutation relation that John was talking about, he has this.
Right.
So it's a delta correlated.
The B diagram.
Yeah. So it's white noise basically.
Two annihilators.
What have I got here?
B diagram.
Forgot that. Right. So what you can put potentially, instead of doing this, you could consider something like this, right? With the, which is not singular anymore, but satisfies a different commutation relation, but it's not a singular one anymore, right? So this is not as singular as that one. It's a smeared field, right? So then you take a limit where this goes to a delta function, right? You take the approximation. Let's say you can take a sequence of this sigma n, right? It goes to a delta function. Then you cover that one, right? So I'm not sure if that is what you're thinking of. You're thinking of something different now. Yeah. So that's a different level of approximation. It's when you go from a norm. So this, when you have a, so you have a system that's driven by this field, right? This smear field. That's not a Markov system, right? But if you take this function here to approximate a delta function, right? Then you get. So that's not quite right. So it's it should be.
Yeah, that's all right. Those are technicalities.
Yeah.
I understand the idea.
Yeah. So you take the limit where this goes with this you get a sequence of functions that go to the delta function, and you get your singular field, right? And that will give you a Markov approximation. So you start with something which is not Markov, then you take the sequence that goes, so you get a Markov approximation.
So is that right? You use your Schur complement to approximate your original system?
The Schur complement gives you the Itô generator matrix for your limiting system, your approximation.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So it gives you a description. So
I understand that.
Yeah.
So I probably missed something. Why do you want to do that?
For model reduction.
Yeah.
You get a small, for example, with this example I had here, right? You had the finite level system in an oscillator. This is an infinite dimensional system, right?
Okay.
Right? So you have to, you're going to simulate this, you have to keep at least some number of Fock states, right? But if your regime is good enough for you to do adiabatic elimination, right, you can remove the whole oscillator, and so you just end up with this subspace.
Okay, right? All right, thanks.
Josh? Hendra, I was kind of wondering, as you were talking, that you're thinking about adiabatic elimination and instantaneous feedback,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like if you can do adiabatic elimination, that approximation is probably okay, but maybe the approximation of instantaneous feedback, you could do some sort of perturbation on that. And I think in Howard Wiseman's thesis,
mm-hmm.
he has some sort of a correction to the his Wiseman-Milburn feedback master equation in terms of a very small time delay.
Right.
I'm wondering whether that could be treated in the SLH formalism, and whether you think the same sort of analysis would go through with a small time delay, where you get this commutivity of the adiabatic elimination and the feedback.
Right. So I don't know what Howard and Howard was.
I think he did it by himself.
I'm not sure. But sometimes in engineering, what you do when you have time delay, you approximate with something called a Pa Dey approximation, right? So potentially you could do that here as well. So then you fit into the usual framework, right? So in fact, the Pa Dey approximation can in the quantum optics can be sort of realized by an optical cavity. So you have a time delay. This might be one way you can approximate it, right? So if you have a time delay here, you approximate it with a, you put a cavity there with an appropriate coefficient that will approximate your original time delay, then you could use this approximation. But other than that, I guess I have to see exactly what Howard and Jared did.
Okay, so there are, oh my goodness.
I have a last one.
Yes,
last question. As a physicist, I'm used to the procedure of eliminating passages in the elimination time bomb method. This seems to me very different because you really decouple the fast and slow degrees of freedom. Mm-hmm. So the elimination group, the fast degrees of freedom, their influence get fed into the effective
slow
theory.
Right.
So I have some intuitive difficulties to understand how you can decoupling. That was very important.
Yeah. So that comes from the condition that was set in this. So you need these conditions to hold. Otherwise, you can't do it. Yeah, so the decoupling condition is really this one, so there's no spilling of your fast to the slow subspace. That's why.
And what guarantees that there is no spilling? You mentioned that if you have a physical model.
Yeah, so you have to. Yeah.
Doesn't quite rhyme with my intuition.
Yeah.
What I'm used to, but.
Right.
You
yeah.
probably wouldn't get a satisfactory limit for the stochastic differential equation on the slow subspace if you didn't have these conditions.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are many examples in quantum optics that can be formulated and do satisfy this condition. So you know, if you look at those examples, that might give you a better understand what's happening.
There's still an effect on the atom as a result of the adiabatic momentum, right? It's not like it's undergoing the dynamics it would if the field were absent.
Oh no, it's not. Right? It's
right, so yeah. Just like in the normalization group, there's still an effect mm-hmm. of the fast variables on the slope.
Yeah.
Isn't this actually the way you can measure quantum jumps? I mean, you go to detuned additional states. I mean, so an external laser doesn't have to be in resonance with
right.
the two-dimensional system.
Yes. Yes, so that means you have...
There will be a phase. I mean, there will be a phase-dependent which actually enters.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's one of the examples done in Bowden Van Handel
yeah.
paper.
Yeah, I'm sure Andrew Silverpark was looking at the problem of eliminating an excited state of an atom.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Its effect.
That was the
state.
First.
It was based
yeah.
on what we did.
Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of example can be fit into this time. So the K, you would have like the energy level delta, which is multiplied by some K, right? And then you have some other parameter which becomes K, and then the ratio will be fixed and you get to the limit.
But another physical example called Frenzy is when you measure the presence of a photon in cavity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without absorbing it. I mean, you teach you it's very fast. You know? So it looks like there is an incoming, but still there is a phase which you change very fast.
Right.
Changes into the population statistics of the atoms.
Right.
But the photon is still there.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
In the first rigorous way of looking at this was a model of some specific quantum mechanical system in a cavity, which we just described as a single mode, which the cavity had then coupled to an end product, continuous mode field coming in. Then you assume the coupling of the cavity mode to the input field is infinitely strong. That's your K parameter. So it would probably correspond to just the Hamiltonian term having a quadratic K component that best describing the scattering of the mode. You can do this non-rigorously, and what you do is you put the mode equation, the Heisenberg equation, equal to zero because you're saying it's relaxing to zero so quickly. It gives you an algebraic equation which you then plug into the Langevin equation for any system operator. And if you plug things in, because you're actually plugging in noise fields now, because you're slaving to the input process, and if you plug things in normal order, it turns out you get the right answer. So this is work I did with Ramon Van Handel a couple of years ago. But again, it's probably worth noting that with the short complementation, because it's pulling in components related to the slow and the fast, you're not losing, there is an influence from the fast degree of freedom into the residual model for the slow coefficients. There is an influence. Which you could interpret in some simple models as being, you know, the effect of plugging in a slaved field.
One last question.
I mean, since you're using quantum fields, I mean, you, in any practical calculation, I would imagine that you encounter divergences. So is the normal loading you have to proceed to subtract all divergences? I mean, as you say, you plug in equations, you encounter products or
Well, usually working at the level, which is a pretty good approximation in quantum optics, where you can use this input-output formalism. If you did start putting in non-linearities of the type you're talking about,
already at this point, I mean, if you use your fields,
you could have things which quadratic in the fields, which would be normal ordering, but I guess there's something cubic or quartic in the fields.
If you had the noise, the lowercase bt or squared, and you started playing around with these, you'd end up evaluating delta functions at zero.
Yes.
This has actually been done by Luigi Accardi and Igor Vlahovic some time ago, where they say, well, what would you do in quantum field theory? You just, let's say, take a delta function at zero and give it some constant value, and then you get a theory dependent on this constant value. But there's no consistency to this, huh?
You can normal order it.
Yeah, you can normal order it, but they seem to have so many different versions of this theory, and there doesn't seem to be one which has, they've said, well, this is the definitive theory. The other problem is things like the Itô product rule, which I showed you, also for two objects. If you then wanted three, which you generally have to do if you want to sandwich, say, a field between a U and a U dagger, the Itô table they get isn't associated. It works for product of two, but not for a product of three. You can't go up from rule from two to three times. So there's no consistent set of rules, as far as I know.
Yeah, so this doesn't include those kind of square fields. It's just restricted to linear couplings. Yeah.
So you'd use something like B dagger squared if you wanted to generate something like squeezing. But the problem is a squeeze state for a field like this is not going to be unitarily equivalent to the backing state. It's a problem which comes from the fact that you're working in infinite dimensions.
Yeah, sure.
There's a result called Shannon's theorem which says when you can actually unitarily implement symplectic transformation. And working in the approximation of white noise, this type of theorem breaks, well, gives you a no-go.
So we have three things to do now. The first and most important is to thank our speakers for very